proceed on the next speaker. We have Juha Pajula from VTT, and he's going to speak about decision support for neurodegenerative diseases. Please.
Yeah. Hello. Really shortly about my background. I'm from VTT Tampere, so where the smart health team mainly locates. Nowadays we are having also people in Helsinki and or more people in Helsinki. We have also people in Oulu. I am a research scientist there with, let's say, 2-3 years now background there. I'm originally graduated from Tampere University of Technology from signal processing in medical domain. Today, the topic is decision support for neurodegenerative diseases, mainly coming up from three different EU projects. Did I have a pointer somewhere? Yeah. So PREDICT-AD, VPH there at IT, and PREDICT-ND. Altogether, we have worked on all of these, being a co-coordinator in two of them. And shortly saying, these PREDICT-AD and PREDICT-ND projects, they have tested the technology which is developed in VPH there at IT. And all of them are more or less now ended at this point. Why the work in those projects have done? There has been significant problems with treating the neurodegenerative diseases. And for example, in this case, it's from the year 2005, so situation might be different now. We can see that there is significant delays of starting the treatment for these kind of diseases because they are really tricky to be diagnosed early enough. And earlier we can start the treatment, better are the outcomes from the treatment. But the problem to make the diagnosis is that how you do it. In most of the cases, for example, in dementia, you don't see anything out on the very early moments. When you see something out, you are late. You should have started the work already. And then we are having very many different options, what kind of things there can be behind the symptoms. Not the same symptoms on the early stage can end up to different kind of diseases. So how you can differentiate those? And then reasons for delays. As I said, it's a problem because of the early symptoms can be similar to different diseases. We are having lack of effective treatments. Also, the patients, they have a fear that if I'm getting this dementia diagnosis, I'm getting out of the society. So they don't want to come to doctor, even though they have noticed that they might have problems. And then, in general, we have this uncertainty of delaying this or noticing the problems. So what we need a differential diagnosis. So, to be able to do this decision support for these things, we have to combine a lot of things. Typically, human eye is really good for noticing different kind of patterns from images, but we are really bad of saying which, from this picture, the size of this part is that. This picture, we can recognize that this is the same part, but we cannot really say if it's bigger, smaller, or if there is some kind of different color on it. It's hard to say. We can say it's different, but we cannot say how much. It's really challenging. The approach in these projects was that we compare against those healthy cases. So we try to differentiate the ill people from the healthy ones with machine learning. And then from the ill patients, we try to differentiate the different groups of diseases. So, to start with, so what we need to create these clinical decision support systems? The system must be quantitative. We have to be able to index the status of the patient and severity, and to in comparison with a bigger group of people. It have to be simple. Doctors don't like to use too tricky systems. If they have to use a lot of time with a computer instead of patients, they typically don't use the computer. They write it down. It should integrate to the existing data, which is typically quite heterogeneous, so it's tricky. It must be individualized, so we should take into account that patient who we are treating with, not the general population on that area. We have to work with incomplete data. The medical data typically is not complete. Any of us who have worked with the medical data knows that there is missing data. Some people have writing zero instead of putting the mark zero there, and so on. And we have to notice what the actual users want from the system. So not only looking the what we can provide or what we can create from the data, that's not enough. We have to check what the doctors want. We have to work with the doctors to create a system so that it benefits them. And the last thing, which actually is the trickiest thing for these modern AI kind of things, it must be explainable. We have to be able to explain why the system says that this patient is ill, why this patient is not ill. If we are having an AI system, these modern things, black box says that on 50% accuracy, I'm saying that this patient is ill. What it means? Okay, it means nothing. 80% accuracy, this patient is. Okay, it's more probable ill, but again, why? How I can treat that illness? I know that I can see that it's ill. The patient is ill, how I treat it. It's tricky if we don't know why. So in this VPH DARE project, where the actual decision support tool was generated or created, technology was created, there the data was computed against the or ill patients' data was compared to the healthy patients' data. And we had a lot of ill patients, a lot of healthy patients. And there were multiple different diagnosis systems to create that data. I will show the later on a picture about the system itself. And the aim was to decrease the subjectivity of the diagnosis process. So if it wasn't aiming to replace the doctor, but it was aiming to help the doctor to understand all the possible data, what they can get from the patient, and how that looks like against the known cases. And also it was aiming to show up these the first symptoms, so to get the correct diagnosis early enough. So here we have one picture about the system developed there. It's now tested on the Predict ND project. What we did there, there were many universities and teams to work with the project. It was EU project, or all of them were. So, but what we did, we created this actual system. We had this automated segmentation and quantification of brain images done, one part of it, and this machine learning and data visualization method for integrating all of this information together. And that's seen mainly here. So what this system does, it shows these different tests here. It shows the brain image of the patient. It shows the selected in data point here as an index, and it shows the different measures behind the index, that how sick the patient is. And doctor is able to go through fast these datas. So what was there on the image analysis side? From T1 images, we compute the volumetry, morphometry, similarity-based analysis, and vascular burden counts. And there was used also the FLAIR images, not only the T1. And each of these alone would not tell too much. But combining the data together brings much more information about the topic. And to get into the way how now in this project, how the data was combined, which also comes to these molecular tests and stuff what we heard on the earlier presentation, is that what VTT has developed is this disease state fingerprint, which is based on disease state index. It's one kind of machine learning approach to combine multiple data sources with a population of health and ill patients. There will be a slide about the actual idea next. And the fine things with this thing is that it works with the missing data. So we don't have a problem about missing data. We just don't take those into account when we compute that patient. And we don't have to imputate anything there because of the missing data. And we can combine data from multiple sources. They don't need to be similar sources. And we have this fingerprint visualization, which combines all of those interactively and gives a fast visual view for a doctor or clinician what are the key things to notice from the patient. Shortly, this fingerprint is sorted based on the strength of the measure, and then this index is showing that how close to the sick or healthy population this patient is, I'm shortly saying. And here we can see also we are in this case, which is on this example, we are having these molecular tests here. So something from CSF, A-beta, total tau, amyloid beta, and from genetic tests on APOE gene is tested in this case. And then we have some personal information, something computed from the volumetric MRI images, some neuropsychological tests, and other MRI features and so on. So how this works, really shortly, there's publications you can check. This is also a patented method, so because there's a company nowadays creating this thing, spin-off from our team. So it computes the difference, so how far away those populations are from each other on this one particular measure. And that creates the relevance. So how relevant, how well the measure can distinguish these two patient groups, the healthy and ill patients. So bigger the relevance, stronger the measure in a sense it is. And then this actual disease state index tells that is the patient closer to the healthy, to the sick group or healthy group, and it's now coded with blue and red color. So white means not known, red means this is a sick patient based on this measure, and blue means that this is a healthy patient. The colors were actually selected with the clinicians. They like that this is better than other colors, so just testing with the end users. In this case, for example, this ADAS test is quite strong. It has a bigger relevance than MRI because this sorts itself based on the relevance. And here we can see, for example, that hippocampal size on MRI image is showing really strongly towards Alzheimer's, if this is about Alzheimer, I cannot remember anymore. In any case, it shows that it looks like more the sick patients than the healthy patients. Ventricles are somewhere in between, but for example, the tau in CSF looks like the healthy population. But this helps the doctor to decide what are the next steps to look forward. So the most clear problems probably should take more into account. So shortly, each share of the measurements that are similar to the cases from the sick or healthy population having the same measures. Here we have now example from different cases in mild cognitive impairment. So this state can go towards Alzheimer or dementia, or it can stay there. So it's a patients who have some problems but not yet sure what they are actually having. In this case, the starting point is really good. It's really close to the healthy population. These two are somewhere in the middle. And this one is clearly getting towards the Alzheimer's disease, based on now fingerprint. But this helps to the doctor to see which ones are the most interesting topics to look forward. For example, redoing these tests later on, which goes to the idea of having the longitudinal analysis with this. So we can follow up how the disease state index is developing with the patients by repeating the measures again and later on. And in these cases, there's two cases now. One which is really slowly increasing within time, and one which is really fast going up and will gain the Alzheimer's disease statement at some point. So here we can see if it goes over this, it would be stated as Alzheimer, but now it's not yet. But will happen at some point. Don't know if the patient is living that long, but there's clearly indication. So a bigger picture about the same what I showed earlier. So now this one has also this was the latest thing which was enabled to the picture or this tool at the end of the projects. So this is now doing differential diagnosis between these indices. Really small to see maximum index value and difference between largest indices. But the idea is that doctor can see with a fast view on first glimpse, the doctor can see what are the key things and which differential diagnoses are the most probable for this patient. So we try to help the work of doctors, not replacing them, but with intelligent machine learning. So this is really high level system overview. So starting with the health data, we have the clinical data, population data, and environmental data as discussed earlier. All of those can affect to the health. We need to bring this person's environmental information for this mechanistic modeling approaches, and at the same time we can work with the personal environmental data for the phenomenological modeling type of analysis. And then bring them together in this clinical decision support system. Now looking clock. And another view about the topic. Here we have also the partners in this project. So looking the vascular flow, modeling of the process progression, different mappings from the brain images, diffusion signal modeling, vascular dementia, biophysical modeling, and statistical model-based segmentation, and even in this in silico optimization. So this picture is trying to explain now what actually happens, how the system was built. So to create the platform itself for the one case, there was needed this patient data set, which was then processed through the system to create the biomarkers from the data. So all of those measures which were shown in the fingerprint. This part was not dealing with the actual patient to coming to doctors. It was something which was already collected. The hospitals were holding the data. Now, when the system was up and running, we got a patient getting the doctor. Doctor gets the measurements, the same as we had here, from the patient, put them through the system, which again does the processing in the same way as on the main system, but now comparing this patient biomarker to this database biomarker. So now there we have the healthy and sick population, and here we have patient to be compared against those. So these biomarkers actually creates the knowledge base, which is then utilized by this clinical decision support tool. And this is something which should be taken into account, that it's one thing to use the system, but it's another thing to develop when doing the EU projects. So we cannot do them at the same time. We first have to ensure that the system works, and then we can try it out. And that was done in PredictND and PredictAD in this scheme we had. VPH there was creating the technology. So as I said, the decision support or this is state index and fingerprint, they are patented, and now we are having this company Combinostics, which is actually developing it further and also having the FDI and CE markings for the product. So this is actually used in certain hospitals already. And it combines that MRI images and different lab measures, cognitive measures, and so on. And what I have understood that it actually is really liked at where it is used at the moment. Of course, they are a small player, just a spin-off compared to the big players in the field, but still it works, and it's really hopefully getting far. So that those three EU projects actually created a new business things, which is not that common. So then for the last parts, I'm just looking to a bit about the current situation and then what happens in the future, hopefully. Most of those measures used, the MRI, lab measures, genetic measures, they actually are quite expensive. The patients have to go to the doctor to get those measurements. So the low cost is one thing which could be utilized to put this detection earlier. So if we can prevent things, it's better than trying to cure things. And something which is developed within VTT also is this different kind of games, which are really low cost, putting the patients or probable patients to play the games and then creating these low cost measurements from these kind of games. So memory games, games which measure the understanding of the problems. And based on these, the patients can then be called to doctor for more detailed measurements. These are now quite recent results from 2017. So in this case, these low-cost measures were compared to these global cognitive scores, and then this is the memory game cognitive score. And then we have this mini mental state examination score from the same patients. And here we can see that actually it's really good for predicting the case with the patients. And it won't cost too much for the doctor to put it up. A bit more measures from similar games, and the results are fairly good in these cases. Then this was within the project. I'm just trying, PredictND, written down there. So this one was to measure how the patient is moving and trying to check if that measure can be used to detect again these neurodegenerative problems. And it was quite simple measure, having just a couple of sensors to measure the movement of the certain parts of the patient. And here some ideas. So counting the spectral entropy of this hip area was able to, it was doable measure to separate the patients which are getting problems from the healthier population. I'm quite well timed. I'm surprised. So all of these three EU projects have now ended. So now we are looking new options, but of course a lot of knowledge has moved to that company. So we are interested for new topics also. And one problem which was also found in these projects was that collecting the data was challenging. We got delays because of the data collection. We couldn't get the patients fast enough. We couldn't get the agreements fast enough. So many of the tests were running really late moments of the EU within the EU project time schedule. It wasn't possible to get the data early enough. Something which was found really essential was that we have to have the healthcare professionals involved strongly on developing these systems. Otherwise, they won't be used, or they are not useful for them, or that happens really easily. It might be that you can create a system which works, but it might be the chance to get a system which doctors don't like is quite high. It was really interesting to notice the integration of different modeling and analysis approaches, and with the fingerprint we were able to bring them together. And also, it also enables us to use these different wearable kind of things. The measures from those are also possible to bring in with the fingerprint approach. So what VTT is doing at the moment, those were past projects. So now we are having this big Medilytics project. There we are working with IBM with a breast cancer pilot. Just project which is just starting, this VOGAS, it's actually a continuation of SniffPhone. That project is aiming to be able to detect certain cancer types from the exhaling of patient, and that's a mobile device, so something you attach on your iPhone, and then that sensor there is measuring that from the molecules of the air. I don't know that too much, I haven't worked with that project, but you can get quite good idea from the homepage. Then we are having the MIDAS project. That's aiming more about the data integration. There we try to help the public decision makers, so in a sense policymakers, to make better health policies based on the population data of their own area. Center TBI is collecting a lot of data about traumatic brain injuries for the future studies. It has been a long project and it still continues for 2 years. Then for genomic side, it is a bit of announcement also that we are having this PREMED project where we try to utilize the Finnish biobanks and companies to bring in new approaches for creating. Now this first tryout is to detect the best cures for certain populations based on the genetic information from the Finnish biobanks. You can check more details from there. Thank you. Any questions? There's 4 minutes before the switch.
Yeah, so you get your time.
Really, really
fun. Questions, comments?
did record, maybe.
Yeah, so you.
I try to repeat.
I have a question. You have introduced the disease state fingerprint, the DSF method in your slides. And I remember in the introduction, it said the common disease information can be extracted from different data sets, from different patients. So I want to know, what's the data analysis method behind the DSF method?
Yeah, so the question was that what is the data analysis method behind the disease state fingerprint?
Yes.
So it's a disease state index. they are actually the same method, two parts of the method. So disease state index is developed in our team, and it's a machine learning approach for combining the data. And disease state fingerprint is the graphical representation of the results of disease state index. And there is a publication, I think you can find it easiest googling the disease state index. You can find the publication from Koikkalainen, Jussi Mattila, and Mattila et Koikkalainen 2014 around.
it's basically a supervised learning method that looks at distributions of data in the database and then calculates, so it's related to kind of Bayesian type of model that's calculating, but it's a bit more intuitive for doctors to understand than that a fingerprint is a kind of visualization on top of it. So what you do is you have different biomarkers that calculate separate probabilities from, because they have their own distributions, and then you combine them, of course, your RPT, for example, all the MRI features you have together and all the genetic information you have together and all the cognitive tests you have together. You weigh them and you calculate them, of course, for the combined index.
So there's a specific machine learning method?
Yeah, it's a supervised machine learning method.
Okay, later I will ask for this.
I can show you the paper on the break. So
is there any open data set that we can do this test?
Well, in practice with that method you can use any data set where you can have numerical biomarkers. So what we have used that for mental health problem kind of studies with these on neurodegenerative problems. It can be used in practice wellness. There's some cases in our team where the same method has been used to detect if the people are having good health or bad health on the wellness point of view. So any kind of measure which you can set up as a numerical value, and then you have two groups of people, so the healthy representative group and the sick representative group, and having the same measures from both of them, and then having a patient which you don't know and you want to match which groups the patient belongs. In that kind of setup, it won't matter which data you use if the data is representative. But I will show you the paper on the break. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Have you, in those large arrays of data, have you tried using a Bayesian classifiers to see which tests are highest of value? Because you may find that your first, so for example, if you use the mini mental status exam, or the case you gave example, 81-year-old woman comes in with progressive confusion and agitation. Don't have to ask many more questions.
Yeah.
You don't need a lot of tests.
Yeah.
So there are, in some sense, the Bayesian classifiers might help you decide that you have enough information after test 3 that you don't have to do the other 20.
Yeah. In that method, I'm going really fast back. In a sense, this does exactly that. So as I said, it works with limited data, so we can build up this knowledge base with a huge amount of different variables, but we can use only 5 variables and it still works. That's the beauty of the system, is that, for example, this case we could use only those, and we don't need to use any of these, or we can take a couple of these and then some of these and some of these, and then we can still classify the patient. So in practice we could do that we have only, let's say, that five different measures. We put those measures through the fingerprint. We see if they show up towards the sickness, and then we do more measures to quantify if it's true, because it might be that we just, like having here, we have a hippocampal things and we look the orientation and maybe amyloid beta, and then it looks really bad. But if we take more measures, then we know that, okay, it's not that bad. It might be bad.
The last one.
Yeah, so it was this, that way. So, like this. So, this was the longitudinal analysis. So, here we had the measures from Z minus 36 until Z. So, we had data and then we tried out how the patient had progressed, because we had to try out that we had to know that where the patient ends up, otherwise, we cannot say that how the method is. working. So that has been done. I think we had some paper about it, but
yeah, we have. I can send you the paper. So that's the longitudinal analysis. They try to separate stable from progressive blood cognitive impairment. So people who have very long days and you want to find out whether it's dementia or whether it's any problem. But we have regarding accuracy, the whole predict and the project was basically
okay, but now I have to close the discussion. Thank you, and for the audience for interest in the topic.